This podcast is part of the Shareable Podcast Network. Learn more at shareable.fm. This is Rogue. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Hello. All right. We're back on Rogue, and today with me, my guest is Bobby Umar. Bobby, what's up, man? Thank you for coming in and for letting me pick apart your superpower.
I'm excited to unload. Whoa, and we have it all organized. How nice is that?
Yeah. I mean, that's actually, I think, one of the good things about coming on to Rogue is that if you are good at a thing, but you're not exactly sure how it works, I'm going to find out. And then I'm going to put it into some sort of an order. And then you get to know how your own superpower works. So Okay. It's, I think it's kind of a good deal. So today, you and I are going to talk about vulnerable storytelling, if I'm not mistaken. Is that true? Can you tell me more about what this superpower is and maybe tell people a little bit about who you are just to get us all level set for anyone listening?
So first of all, you are correct, sir. And then secondly, yes, I am Bobby. I have been a motivational speaker for 20 years. I've done 1,000 keynote workshops across 4 continents. In the early days, it was about authentic connection. And then I started talking about personal branding. And then I started talking about digital marketing. I talked about culture and community. Then I started talking about authority building and trust building and storytelling. And pretty much what ended up happening was, you know, connection was kind of the deep rooted piece. But the thing that I now realize that I say is my superpower, aside from being great hugging and also a great dad, is that vulnerable storytelling is a big part of what I do. I'm not afraid to talk about the deepest, darkest stuff in my life or about other tough topics. But I think that's a big part of what feeds into my keynotes, what feeds into my content, what feeds into my newsletters. And even when I do coaching calls, I'm willing to share what I've struggled with, and it actually makes me a better coach. So that's a bit about who I am, what I do in terms of things. The keynotes are one thing I do. I also run a membership community for a small business owners called TLB Club. And then I also run a high level TEDx mastery program to help people to land a TEDx talk and leverage that for their brand, their authority building, and their business building.
Amazing. A couple things that immediately came to mind. One, even though you and I have never actually met in person, we've met enough times over Zoom. I fully believe you would be a great hugger. There's just something, I get the sense that you would be like a really, like one of those really good, like good hug type things.
Exactly. Yeah,
like I could totally see that. And gosh, I forgot the second thing because I was just so into the hug thing. So what we're going to do today is we're going to steal your superpower. So the show's based on the X-Men character Rogue. What Rogue does is that she can absorb other superpowers through the power of touch. And what we're going to do is we're going to absorb your superpower through the power of conversation. This vulnerable storytelling piece, the career path you kind of laid out, it makes sense how you would get to there. And I believe you to be the type of person who would use your powers responsibly. You seem like the sort of person that would never use vulnerable storytelling as a means to manipulate people or use your vulnerability as a way to get information on other people so you could, you know, have some sort of leverage over them. But every superpower comes with some sort of a dark side, comes with a, like, in the wrong hands, it could be used improperly. So can we just start there and say, like, we're about to go into this thing that you can do and you've found these amazing benefits. And I think you and I have been able to connect very deeply in the short time we've known each other, because I think you've been willing to let those walls down. You've been very honest. We've connected over different things. And, you know, we met in your TLB, you know, the brand club, and connected a bunch of times. And I was like, oh, wow, like really easy to talk to, really easy to connect with you. But obviously those same powers can be used, you know, nefariously. So can we talk a little bit about what can you imagine? What are the caveats to this? What are your sort of like, please, if you're going to use this to, you know, rule the world in a negative way, don't use these powers. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. First off, I would say that, I mean, you mentioned manipulation, but the truth is we're always influencing people. So there is something there. It's more about what's the intent behind the influence. What are you trying to do with that? How you can use it? So there's always a way to take it beyond. I've seen people who attempt vulnerable storytelling, but it is more manipulative in the sense that they keep. I've seen people say they share the same kind of deep, dark story to get attention. or to, you know, I guess there, it's kind of like a cry for like impressions or likes and things like that, which I think is not as authentic. So there's got to be a genuine authentic attention behind. Now, how it can be used for bad? Yeah, I think that if I wanted to, I could be far more manipulative with, you know, how I speak and what I say and how I can, you know, cater to other people's vulnerabilities. I think that's certainly something. Or you know, when I am vulnerable and I create that connection and they open up, there's certainly a lot there that you can pounce upon. I mean, you know, one of the interesting things about, you know, relationships with my partner is that, you know, we know each other's vulnerability points. So when we have our biggest arguments, you know, you pick at something and it's like, hey, and then next thing you know, like, so, you know, it's certainly, now if you were doing that all the time and just being a total ass, yeah, I think that could be really, really bad for folks. And you see it all the time too in business and politics, that there are people who are definitely manipulating, whether it's genuine vulnerability or even like what's called, fake or inauthentic vulnerability. Yeah, I think that because it is a tool of connection, influence, marketing, communication. And so, yes, it can be done the wrong way.
Yeah. And, you know, after Brené Brown's, you know, groundbreaking vulnerability talk, I feel like a lot of people were really on that train. And there were some people who I think started to use it as a bit of a tactic. And so they would reveal something small and other people would then feel safe to maybe, you know, reveal something a little larger. And then that person who was, you know, who got it all started, maybe wasn't being responsible with the information that they were given as somebody else opened up to them. So, I can totally see that it could be used in the wrong way. And, I like the way that you kind of framed it. It's like, what are you doing it for? What's the intent of even being vulnerable in the first place? When you look at, imagine like to an example of this, right? Like, so vulnerable storytelling, like let's make it super tangible and super real. I want to know kind of what does it feel like when it's happening and it's working? What's an example you might, like a scenario where you might utilize vulnerable storytelling to move things forward, to have some sort of a positive result?
Well, in terms of what it feels like, usually when I'm talking to somebody or whether I'm talking to a group or a one-on-one person, sharing a bit of myself and my struggle allows me to connect with them in a deeper, more profound way, such that they understand me better, they trust me better, there's heads that are nodding, and it creates an environment that feels safer and they're willing to open up about their things because they relate to it too. So that, and so how does it manifest itself? Well, if I'm in a coaching call and someone's struggling, and I'll say, hey, I'll explain how I struggled in the early days of my speaking, my business career, like, you know, this, and how hard it was. And so for me, when you do that, they realize they're not alone. That's the ultimate benefit of vulnerable storytelling. Someone realizes they're not alone. And that is incredibly empowering and incredibly validating. And so when that happens, you know, then they realize that, you know, I'm here to support them and take the lessons I've learned. And here's what I recommend. And here's how we can help you get to that next level. And so the coaching calls go a little bit better. And with a keynote, again, they go a lot better because they trust me more. So when I share my message or whatever it is I want to say and influence, they're more willing to listen to what I have to say because I have shown myself to be not someone who's just selling something, but someone who's being who he is and taking those lessons to help people. And so I've seen that in multiple situations, one-on-one conversation with friends about their relationships, with coaching calls, with speaking. It definitely helps. I'm not sure. Did I answer both questions? I think there's two questions.
Yeah, no, there, and it was a bunch of to unpack there. I also want to go back to something you said earlier that I thought was interesting. You mentioned the whole part about understanding your partner's vulnerabilities, for instance, right? And push understanding how you can push those buttons, right? And I've often said that the people who have the greatest capacity to make others feel not alone, right? To make them feel like they belong, also generally possess the greatest capacity to make people feel excluded and exiled and on the outside, because I think they're two sides of the same coin, right? Because in order to make someone feel that they belong and that they're not alone, we have to give them something that shows them that they aren't, which means we need to know what that thing is in the first place. We need to or to offer up something that allows them to relate to it. Like you brought up kind of the point of relatedness. But the flip side of that is that if we also know that, right, that we, if we know what their fear is or what their vulnerability is, we can use that to make them feel like they belong. And we could also use that to make them feel like they're alone. We can push them away. Well, so it's interesting that's kind of two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I mean, a part of it is if I know what my vulnerabilities are. So let's say I struggle with parenting or binge eating or weight loss, body image, diabetes, and I know how I feel, I could easily take those feelings and go to someone else who's going through the same thing and call it all those things that your head's saying to yourself. And I call them those things. That's where, you know, vulnerability can be used as a really, as an evil power.
That just made me think of, so you brought up some things that I know are like things that are your things, right?
Yeah.
And I think to have the confidence maybe, or the safety to be able to do this vulnerable sharing, there has to be something there, right? Because some people won't feel safe to share certain things. And I'm wondering, like, is it that the environment has to be right in the first place, or do you have to take the first step in the vulnerable storytelling? Like, what are kind of the preconditions, I think, that maybe need to be there? Because what you're talking about, some cases are things that have happened to you and you're comfortable talking about them. But for people who aren't, kind of what are kind of the first steps of getting into a place where you can maybe start leveraging some vulnerability in your storytelling and your connection? Do you need the environment to be right first? Is it something you have to get right with yourself? Do you just have to take the leap? Like, where do you kind of see people getting started in that?
Well, first, the reason why it's easy for me now is because I've been exercising that muscle. And so it's easy for me to do it. In the beginning, it wasn't it wasn't as easy, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, going back to my first TEDx talk where I talked about the power of deep, authentic connection, I talked about caring. If you care enough about a person or a cause or an idea or a group, and you communicate in a very, very proactive but meaningful way, you can create that deep, authentic connection that then leads to change. And so using that kind of model, what ends up happening is that those variables are the things that are at play. And, you know, do you feel like that person that you're with or the group you're with, that there's care there? Imagine a support group. Do you feel, before you don't open up for several weeks? There's a movie I watched called Hitch, right? And Hitch goes to the support group. He's a superhero, right? And speaking of superheroes, and he won't, he's like, pass, I don't want to say anything. But eventually he says, yeah, I drink.
Oh, Hancock, you mean? Sorry, you mean Hancock.
Not Hitch. Yeah. Sorry, not Hitch.
I was like, they're both Will Smith, but I was like, I feel like this is a very Hancock, different movie. Right. You know, Hancock,
so,
okay.
So he's like, pass. But then he's like, I drink and stuff. And, you know, he opens it up because the environment is that he feels cared for. And so when you feel cared for, that's great. Now, the communication part is, if someone is bold enough to ask the question, right, you have the opportunity to dismiss it or you have the opportunity to answer it. So if someone asks me, you know, hey, imagine going to someone and saying, do you ever struggle with your weight? I mean, obviously it's hard. Like, you know, as an overweight person, even other overweight people that I know, I don't bring it up.
Yeah.
Right. But if I did, then, you know, they might be like, wow, okay, Bobby, this overweight person's asked me this thing. Or I say a brown guy, do you ever struggle as a brown guy and whatever? Like, you know, when you ask that really direct question, it definitely opens up potentially the floodgates if that person wants to do it. Having that care and then having that proactive question, those are all variables that will add to the ability to break open the vulnerability vault.
And I was going to say, the other part of that I'm imagining is that in a scenario like that, if it doesn't yet feel comfortable to be able to make that sort of a proactive question, sharing it creates that opening for other people to say, yeah, me too. And I was thinking when you were saying about, like, it might be difficult to go up to someone and ask them about their weight, but as a fellow parent, I know it's really easy around other parents to be like, yo, I am struggling right now. These kids they have been up all night, or they've been really difficult lately or whatever. And I think most of the time other parents will kind of take that bait and be like, yeah, me too, because they've probably also been going through something.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine that's another piece of it is, like, you know, sometimes it's a matter of querying other people or questioning them. And other times it's more about opening it so other people can kind of take the bait to engage with it.
There's also another variable that I thought of, which is what I called 100% participation. And what that means is when I used to work with young kids, we used to have everyone 100% participation in activities. And when people are doing something, let's say we're doing a silly costume party and everyone has to dress up, the people that don't want to do it, they're comfortable doing it because everyone else is doing it. They may not do it as much, mm-hmm. but they're doing it. And then another example would be like this, not to use a really weird example, but skinny dipping. So like it's a fascinating because if there's 12 people and it's late at night on the campfire in front of the beach, and everyone decides, and if most people decide, let's go skinny dipping, the other people are way more likely to join and they're comfortable doing so. If there's just one person, no. But as soon as you have this group dynamic, it just feels more safe because if everyone's doing it, then it's not so terrible that you're doing it too. And I find that concept fascinating, but I've seen it time and time again.
Have you ever seen that video about the first follower?
No.
It's that there's this video. It was taken like a festival or like a concert or something. Mm-hmm. And somebody gets up and
TED Talk, right? The crazy dancer guy.
Yeah. Famous. And that's right. It was a TED Talk. So yeah, the first follower is like really what made it all happen. It wasn't the first person crazy dancing that took the leap. It was the first person that validated it and made it safe. So that seems like that might. Yeah. So it's like you could question, you could open, or you could also validate somebody else. And then that opens the door for others. All of that. Awesome. Okay. I have the superhero question I got to ask you, which is, there are three kinds of superheroes as I see it, like three big camps of superhero, right? Yeah. There's the superhero that's born with it. Krypton, right? Superman comes from another planet, born with whatever the thing is, right? There's the something happened to you. This could be, you know, an X-Men or a Spider-Man, mutation, something happened. And then from then on, your life is forever changed. And then there's the person who trains. There's the Bruce Wayne who, you know, will be the world's greatest detective and martial artist, right? And I think for every superpower, there's always a blend of all three. So there's a part of this ability to utilize vulnerable storytelling that you're just innately born with. It's a comfort level with yourself to be able to say things, et cetera. There's a part of it that probably something happened to you at some point and you recognize that this was valuable, that it was useful. And then there's a certain part of it you mentioned, you do it now because you've exercised that muscle.
Yes.
How would you kind of break down, broadly speaking, for those who want to steal the superpower for themselves, how much of this is nature? How much of this is nurture? How much this thing happens to you and you decide to start changing how do you go about things? Like, where does this fall on that kind of superhero continuum?
So first of all, I love how you broke down the three different types of superhero. That's great. And I totally see it. I totally see it. I mean, for me, I would say the biggest thing has been the moment. The epiphany moment, I think, for the most part, but I had several of them. There have been several moments that changed me and realized, but the biggest one for me was I was at a speaking event with three other of my fellow speakers and we were on a panel and someone asked a question about, you know, just struggling to, you know, get through and stuff. And I decided to tell them, well, you know what? I've had dark days. I've had days where I wake up the whole day, watch a crap load of TV and watch an Oprah. And then it's 4 o'clock and I've done nothing. I feel like crap. And then I go binge food in the kitchen and then, you know, just have a completely nothing evening and I just feel terrible about myself. I forgive myself next day, get up and get back to it. And they couldn't believe I shared this on a gigantic stage in front of like hundreds of people. And then once that happened, the floodgates opened, the other speakers started sharing too. And it was quite an amazing moment. And that epiphany made me realize that this is something that's really big. So for me, that was yes, I've trained and yes, I was born with my social abilities, but that moment was one of many moments that started to build it for me. But in terms of getting good at it, there are people that start off, we know a lot of people who are like, you know, super quiet, awkward people when they're younger and they've grown up into adults and now they are very, very comfortable sharing it. And usually it's because of that epiphany moment, probably. And then they decide to train and build it. And the more they talk about it, you know, I have a feeling like Malala Yousafzai was probably a really shy, awkward person. And then what happened to her, she decided to speak about it. And same with Greta Thunberg. And look what happens to them, right? And now they're very good at sharing very vulnerable, deep, powerful stuff all the time. So I think anybody can be trained to get better at it. It's more about learning the ins and outs of it and following our superhero model system that helps us get better at it.
Well, that's you queued me up perfectly, and I swear we didn't set this up, but like that's where I want to actually talk to you next about is, and you queued it up with training and learning. I believe in, and I've shared this on different platforms, but the superhuman framework. And the superhuman framework is learning, thinking, communication, and action. That those four abilities, meta abilities, are really everything. That if we want to level up and grow in different ways, these are ways we learn new superpowers and how we get better, right? And so on the side of learning this, there's sort of the experiential learning of like the school of life, right? Where you share vulnerably and you see what happened. Was this the right environment to do it? Was this the right situation? There's all that sort of stuff. But there's also probably some form of things to look into, books to read, TED Talks to watch. If somebody wanted to begin their journey of mastering vulnerable storytelling, vulnerable connection, using and leveraging vulnerability to improve the depth of their relationships and changing the world, how would you go about building out like a lesson plan for them comprised of whatever modes that you think make the most sense? How do you train for this? How do you get better at it? Where do you start?
I think the starting point is knowing yourself, and that comes from doing a deep dive into your life story and your values and your personal brand. And so one of the exercises I do with all my clients is have them go through their life story. Now, they bullet point different things in their life that they remember, both the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then as we start to do this this exercise, we start to springboard into other things that we had forgotten. The neurons start to fire up. You start to remember more and more things. Pretty soon, a 2-page document of, 20 bullet points starts to become a 10-page document with, 50 bullet points and probably multiple paragraphs. And that exercise has been phenomenal because it forces you to look at the things that you've been through. And next thing you know, you are also sharing feelings, you're sharing the what, the so what, the now what, the learnings, the lessons, the insights. And that also leads to your personal brand because you start to see things about your life and your stories that are part of who you are, the values you had when you're younger and how they evolved. I think that's a really powerful cornerstone and foundation of what I do when it comes to working with people, including I think it fits in with the vulnerable storytelling piece as well. And then I think the second thing is when you look at people, you finding people that you would that inspire you. I mean, TEDx Talks is actually one of the best things because, like, you can, there's lots of great talks about people, what they've struggled. Like one of my favorite vulnerable talks is, it was a transgender person, I think from the Philippines, where it was outlawed, and just the journey of what they've done and what they've been through, and where, like, just wow, and they're sharing this so openly. It's very inspiring to see that because. And Malala is another good example. She's sharing this message, potentially at risk to her life, as opposed to just, her public image. That to me is incredibly important. So there are a lot of inspiration everywhere when you look at people that are doing those things and they take action or they speak. So I think you can learn from that as well. But when you know yourself and you know all the things you struggle with and you explore all the feelings you've been through, it helps you understand that other people are probably going through the same thing, and and when you know yourself and you know that you've been through these different things, it's easier to connect with other people and extract maybe what they've been going through. So when I've struggled with stuff, I know how to ask people certain things and how to actually get into topics by sharing it first and hearing from them as well.
So the examples you gave, something I think is really interesting there is there's so much risk. There's so much potential for things to go badly. Yes. And this goes back to something that you had said earlier about kind of like know why you're using this power, right? Like, and that leads me down to the path of like purpose. We're talking about like, what are we doing it for? Right. So Malala or the transgender TEDx talk, these are people who are doing something that is potentially extremely risky to their own safety potentially. Mm-hmm. And to put themselves out there, they have to be standing for something greater than themselves. And then when you're starting with that, looking through your story and getting to know yourself and understanding what you've been through, that's a kind of a natural path to getting a sense of what's important to you. And I want to ask you a bit about, take that as sort of like the springboard for this, but I want to understand a bit more about mindset here, because some of the mindset you've described is a bit about, you know, understanding how this creates connection and like your way of thinking about like, this is a way to create deeper connection with people. But also some of it is about like, how do you keep yourself going in the face of potential risk? So I want to understand a bit more about the mindset of vulnerable storytelling as a superpower. And what are some of those kind of key mindsets that you think are important to have and to work on so that you can sustain through those points where it might be really difficult to use this superpower?
I think the mindset piece is quite diverse and varied on this, but I think another thing that comes up is, as a speaker, I often say that I'm a teacher. And so when I'm sharing vulnerability, I am trying to teach something to folks. That's one thing. I think that mindset of teaching is really, really important. The other mindset of perspective and context, those are really powerful frames for yourself to make sure that you know you're doing things in an authentic way. That's something that comes up as well. But one of the big ones is the validation that comes when, you know, I have a very large extended brown family, and I was at a wedding, and one of the people who grew up in our family, like, you know, the son of a second cousin type thing, I knew who he was. I didn't know him that well, but he came up to me. He's like, hey, Uncle Bobby, I just want to tell you that I've been following your stuff for like 5 years, and you talked about binge eating. And I want to let you know that I've been binge eating, and I couldn't believe that my uncle was talking about this stuff, because most people who are in our brown community don't talk about this. But I just want to say thank you. I was like, oh, wow. And I just started chatting. I couldn't believe it. But he, you know, now that's very validating, because it's like, wow, okay, my message is working. Because most people consume and they don't say anything. They don't send you messages. And he came up to me after hearing me for 5 years. And so that validation also helps with the mindset, especially when you get all the crappy ones. Because the dark side of this is that when you are put yourself out there, people do say really terrible things. You know, I once got an email from somebody, and you know, whoever they were, they shielded their email with some sort of anonymous crap, and then told me, I heard you speak about, you know, your body image issues that you had, and I just thought that that was really stupid and dumb, and you look pathetic, you know, it has an emotional toll, and I felt it, but it was just one person. But, you know, I definitely thought about it for that next day or two, and that bothered me. And then another time I shared my health journey on Twitter, and then one person just started going right after me for being just fat and overweight and disgusting looking. I was like, what are you doing? And eventually I got sucked into it, but I knew it was a troll. They're just seeking attention. So you have to have a strong mindset about this. But again, if you talk about this more and more, your mindset gets tougher. It gets stronger. And the last thing I'll say about this is empathy is a huge mindset piece. Because when I deal with any haters or any trolls or anyone that might come my way, my empathy allows me to understand, you know, what they're saying, why they might be saying it. Because a lot of people project their pain. And ultimately forgive them or forgive myself and not let it get to me. Now it does get to you a little bit, but it doesn't get to me as much, because my empathy allows me to make like filter the pain or the hurt more. And I think that's a really powerful mindset, to just care about people and be compassionate, because everyone's going through their own journey. So when they project their pain, it doesn't bother you as much.
Yeah. And it bears repeating that, like, the internet is a very horrible place sometimes. So don't take it personally. There's a lot of just people there. They're just there to spread misery. So, if you put yourself out there like that, you are bound to get both the good and the bad. And I think going into it prepared for that, should potentially shield you from a little bit of it. But it does hurt when people say really horrible things. Yeah. Is there anything you think people, listening to this, who maybe have started to see in their own lives where they've included some vulnerability in the way that they've connected with people and how it's helped them, that, you know, as they're going through it, do you think there's any sort of, for lack of a better way of saying it, like doing it wrong or thinking about it wrong? Is there any sort of like traps to watch out for where, because you had mentioned earlier the thing about like using it for attention or to generate likes and this and that. And to me, that seems like it would be a really slippery slope down doing it inauthentically and actually winding up hurting yourself and feeling more disconnected and alone. Because I feel like part of this vulnerability piece is, as you mentioned, getting validation from others that the thing you've shared resonates with them, which then in turn validates you. So it creates that connection. Is there anything that or anything else that you think is worth kind of like underscoring as like a, hey, watch out for this as you're going through this, because it's really easy to just say like, oh, be more vulnerable and it'll connect with people and, you know, this and that. Are there any kind of parts of the mindset or of the action of doing this that you think are worth flagging?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. You don't want to be someone who's just doing it all the time just to get that attention, because when you really need it, maybe people will start to not believe you or not want to help out. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be very careful with that. There's a person I know who would talk about suicide, and he did it all the time. And after a while, I was like, you know, like he's saying the same thing over and over again. I don't know whether I started to lose interest in whether it was real or not. Like I couldn't tell anymore because he just did it all the time. And it felt like it was the same message. A very common trap of vulnerability is saying the same thing over and over again. If you repeat it over and over again, like if I just said, I struggle with binge eating, you know, okay, great. I struggle.
It becomes like your brand, right?
I do every day. Yo, yeah. I binged again, guys. Man, I suck. I feel like shit. Okay. I mean, if I do that every day, eventually, yeah, it becomes your brand and becomes an expectation. And then all of a sudden, it's not as effective anymore. Instead, what I do is I share different stories about binge eating and different insights about binge eating to keep it interesting. And also, it serves a certain purpose when they do it every day. Because the other thing, too, I wouldn't do vulnerability every day. The people who do vulnerability every day, that person, the suicide one, was screaming for attention. Now, there's another woman who talks about suicide and how it impacted her son. And her message is different. She does it and she talks about it every day too. But hers has, she has different stories, different insights. And she's trying, and it's clear from the intent. Again, always goes back to the intention. There's two big things, which is the intention. That's how you tell the difference. The genuine intention people have, and then the method in which they do it. Mm-hmm. And if you do those things really, really well, you're going to be a much better vulnerable storyteller. If you forget one of those things or screw one of those things up, it's going to taint the message or it's going to cause havoc or potential issues to your brand or to other people who are following you.
I just wrote down an insight that I'm going to share as I summarize everything that I've heard from you today. Yeah. I think I have a pretty clear picture here, but I want to, before I summarize everything that I've heard about how this superpower works, I feel like I want to spend a little bit more time actually just giving some more examples of like scenarios, like, cause there's like giving a talk, right? There's like being at a networking event, but I want to just have a little bit more of a clear picture when you say vulnerable storytelling, like give me some examples of like real world applications of this for people. Like there's the ones that you've given, but like help me like for the people listening, understand where this can come in their life in ways that they might not be thinking of already.
Man, so many ways. telling my children how I struggle in high school with drama when they're going through their drama and feeling like a loser, you know, at the dance or in this situation. That's an example. Talking to my partner about being vulnerable about something that I'm struggling with and how maybe I've hidden something for her and whatnot. And that comes into building our relationship as in a marriage or in a relationship. In sales, you know, when I do a sales call with somebody and I hear, you know, I'm asking them some pretty deep personal questions, but I feel the need to also share a little bit of my kind of struggle as well. And when I do that, they open up more. And when they open up more, we start to really get to the main issue, which we then try to work together and solve. I see it. And then you see that all the time, you see it, business leaders, political leaders and whatnot, when they share. You know, a lot of the majority of people will share stories about other people. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a client or, you know, I met this person from Maryland or, you know, you see it in political speeches or in business, you know, one of our employees, you know, but when they do it, it's way more powerful. It's way more relatable. And I think it has a chance, particularly in a large platform, to inspire a lot of people. And so I think that's where it can become really, really, but you see it all the time. And I think it can be used just about anywhere. Like I said, I use it in coaching calls, I use it in keynotes, but you can use it, because what happens is then you also have friends who see that you do that. Like, you know, because I'm known for being someone who shares vulnerability, other people are more likely to share stuff with me that comes randomly. I had one friend who came by and said, "Hey, Bobby, I want to come meet with you." I'm like, "Sure, I haven't seen you in a while. Let's hang out." And then she came here, and next thing you know, told me about her relationship and her marriage, and she broke down just bawling, you know, for 30 minutes. And I'm here, and I spent 2 hours just coaching her, and I was like, "Why did you come? Why did you come to me?" He's like, "Well, you know, you've always seemed like somebody that just creates a safe space and is accessible and would want to help." And so I tried to help her. And that's, you know, that those moments are, you know, quite, now I could have, you know, I could have been evil Bobby and not done anything or, you know, picked it apart. But yeah, those things come up in just with your friends. So yeah, I think it comes up in a lot of places. And if you're just willing to share, and now everyone has different levels of sharing. Like, I don't expect people to be as vulnerable as I am. I think it's also important to understand, I want to make sure we capture this in your quote unquote model, is that there's a difference between privacy and personal, right?
Yes.
So it's really important that I share personal information. I try not to share private information. So, you know, there was a guy actually on LinkedIn one time, and he was talking about his marriage and how it sucked. And then he started dissing his wife. And I said, "Listen, I think this is wrong. Why are you calling her out and naming her?" Like, he thought he should be honest. There's this whole idea of, well, I'm trying to be vulnerable. I'm trying to be completely radical transparency, radical honesty.
Yeah.
But putting people that don't deserve it under duress or whatever, that's not good. Like, that's where it becomes bad. And so I said, no, like, what you should do is you should share that you're going through a divorce and here's how I feel. And that's okay, but don't throw people under the bus. Now, there are examples where, if let's say a woman has an abusive husband and she wants to call his name out, go for it. Like, yeah, that's fine. Name them and shame them. I'm all for that. But other times, be mindful of your kids, be mindful of your colleagues, be mindful of your work, be mindful of people that don't want to, like, and a good example is, you know, right now, you know, one thing I don't want to share publicly is that, you know, there's certain health issues in my family, but that's between my family. And we don't talk about it publicly because I love and respect the people that, you know, I'm with. And that's incredibly important too. So you have to be mindful of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. All this is so good. I have so much here. And I'm going to have to go back through this and to make sure that I really nail your superhero model here. But I want to share some of the things and like summarize what I heard here today about your superpower. And I want you to tell me if I get any of this wrong, but, I want to try and, summarize some of the key points that I heard. So here's what I heard about how to steal this ability. So when it comes to learning this ability, it doesn't really matter if you're born with it. It doesn't really matter if you train at it. It doesn't really matter if something happened to you. It's kind of a bit of each of them, but that there are going to be moments that come up that you will have the opportunity to share something vulnerably and create a connection. And that could set you on a path to practicing the skill more often and using it in the right circumstances. Now, in order to do this, the first step in learning that is most important is learning about yourself, understanding your own journey, understanding the things you've been through, the traumas you've experienced, the things that you like about yourself and don't like about yourself, all of that stuff, your personal brand, all of that stuff. And looking at the patterns in that to try and understand out of all of that and all of the things you've been through, what is important to you? What is the purpose, the thing that is bigger than you that will keep you going in that? Because that's going to be the mindset that allows you to keep pushing forward. And the thing I heard from you that I really liked as a helpful model for this is I would give it the category of teaching, generosity, and helping. That, like, if you're set to try and help people either through teaching or through being generous and being there for people, and especially through helping people to not feel alone, which in turn, in doing that, you yourself get to feel less alone, that is a really great mindset to have in going through this sort of work. And then I wrote this down when we were talking about the kind of like getting it wrong, and I was saving it for this. The intention matters. And if the intention is attention, then it's probably not the right one. That there's better intentions to have in order to, I guess, not fall down into a path that might be difficult to come back from, or where it becomes your personal brand and all of a sudden you have the expectation where you have to overshare.
It's the intention to go into your model to help others,
yes,
not to help yourself.
Yes.
Although in the end, it does help us.
Yes, absolutely. So the intention being teaching generosity and help, but if the intention is just purely attention, that's a potential recipe for a dangerous path. And then I love this because I heard a bunch of different words in today's conversation that actually you would be able to find in the pages of my book, The Lovable Leader, care, trust, and safety. So three pillars of lovable leadership: care, trust, and safety. And I heard all three of them here today, that it is very difficult for us to be vulnerable in scenarios where we don't feel that there is care. It's very difficult for us to be vulnerable around people that we do not trust. And it's very difficult for us to be vulnerable in situations where we do not feel safe. And so if we can care about others, and if we can create trust with them, and we can create a space where they feel safe, we're creating a space where vulnerability can happen. And that allows us to see in one another relatedness, and to feel less alone, to have deeper connections, and to actually have better results because we're not keeping each other at arm's length. So those are a lot of the things that I heard today, a lot about relatedness and not feeling alone, and a lot about the right intentions driving the ability to utilize vulnerability as a means of connecting. Did I get anything right or wrong?
That's fantastic. Everything you said is things I resonate with and I think are really amazing. I think the only other things that I maybe forgot to mention is self-awareness, mm-hmm. in the sense that, and which is part of life story engagement with yourself and things like that. But some people, I've met people who have claimed to be self-aware. I've met people who claim to be empaths. I've met people who claim to be mindset coaches. And it's unbelievable how unaware they are about their limitations. And then the second piece is therapy, counseling, support. Getting therapy, getting counseling. Certainly the help that I got with my binge eating and my body image and all that kind of stuff with therapy was incredibly important. And so it wasn't just like, you know, I naturally just got to where I needed to be. No, I had help and I had support. And I think that's also incredibly important to get to that next level.
And I thought about this earlier, but then the thought came into my head and it flew out, and you just saying this made me remember it. I remember someone once telling, I can't remember what the scenario was, where I was, people were asked to share in whatever this environment was. And they said, if you're going to share something, share scars, not wounds, meaning that it's something that is healed and you can talk about, not something that is still unresolved. And this piece about trauma, about therapy and about like kind of working through your stuff is what helps you go from wounds to scars and allows you to have a little bit of the distance from it so you can talk about it without it being a potentially, you know, triggering or traumatic experience for yourself, but instead that you have a little bit of distance from it so you can actually comment on those as a way of connecting with others rather than reliving it in a potentially damaging way.
And the best part is that when you do this, like Malala has done, is that you own it, right? So when you talk with the trauma, talk with the challenge, talk with the vulnerability, you're owning it. So that's why me talking about binge eating and weight issues is me owning it. And I think that's also another amazing aspect of, owning that superhero ability.
Yeah, I that's a whole piece that come in right at the, you know, right at the ninth hour here, or 11th hour, I guess, is owning it. Is like, you gotta, whatever that self-discovery leads to and whatever the thing that you're going to share, you got to own that. You can't just be tiptoeing around it, because that's the only way you're going to be confident enough to let it out, but also for other people to go, you know what, I can say something too.
Yeah, and I want to add one last thing, which is the, you know, we're talking about vulnerability, but I talk about vulnerable storytelling. And what I mean by that is that being a storyteller and a TEDx, five-time TEDx speaker and all that kind of stuff, storytelling is great. And it's one of the best things we all do across the board, across industry and professional and personal lives. But the ability to tell stories is one. The ability to tell a personal story is another one. But the ability to tell a vulnerable story that comes from you, that is top tier. And if you can get there, it really can make a difference and inspire a lot of people.
I love it. Bobby, thank you for coming on to Rogue and sharing your superpower with our audience. As always, in the show notes, I will have all of the instructions of how to steal this superpower, some of the show notes. And if you're a member of the Superhero Institute, you get access to the Rogue Gallery, which has all of the different superpowers bundled together in different PDFs. So hope people do that. And with that, this has been another episode of Rogue. I'm Jeff Gibbard. My guest today, Bobby Umar. Thank you for coming.